Welcome to the online dental mentoring service, where Dr. Derry Rogers and Associate Professor Michael Stubbs present clinical overviews and speak to dental leaders on the developing areas of modern day practice to assist you to develop and grow yours. Visit onlinedentalmentoring.com for more podcasts and training videos, all available free to our subscribers. We hope you enjoy today's show. Rogers have created this knowledge source to address the following areas of need in dental education. Practice building tips, especially as we return after lockdowns. Tips and tricks that we've learnt over the years that have assisted us with our practice growth. Specialist overviews and developments in perio, endo and ortho, and the latest in digital technology that's assisting diagnosis and treatment planning. Michael and I have got over 70 years combined experience in dental care. I personally graduated in 1977, developed my skills in cosmetic reconstructive dentistry in the US, and introduced the concept of cosmetic dentistry to Australia in 1986. Since then, I've developed through my DR Institute training programs in Australia, New Zealand, Asia, the EU and the US, focusing on cosmetic reconstructive dentistry. Michael, tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, thanks, Derry. It's nice to be here. My background is really, I finished dentistry in 1988 and I then went on and became an oral pathologist and then further went on and did oral medicine. And during those times, like everybody listening to this program, I've done lots of presentations and nationally and internationally, and I particularly focused my career on dealing with the difficult and challenging patients, those cases that seem that nobody else seems to be able to assist. My special interest is certainly orofacial pain and disease of the mouth and jaws, particularly temporomandibular disorders, and I very much enjoyed working in the field of dental sleep medicine. So we plan to do a weekly podcast, Derry, as well as provide you, the listener, with short videos on relevant topics that you can access for free at www.onlinedentalmentoring.com.au.
We'll also do a Q&A podcast monthly where we answer the best questions that are posted on our website, in order to assist you with your return to your dental clinics after lockdown and how to rebuild your clinical environment to create the dental practice that you've always wanted to work in. So with that background, we'd like to start off our first podcast with an overview of what we're hearing and seeing in our practices with the COVID issues that are impacting all of us. Mike, what are you seeing as the major presenting issues coming into your specialty practice that you feel are related to COVID?
Well, certainly we'd have to say significant tooth clenching. I have patients who I have successfully treated over many years who've had temporomandibular disorders. You know, it's in these current lockdown situations I've had them present with developing of pain. And I think also it's fair to say that other than TMJ pain and facial pain, it's interesting too the number of cases I've seen of recent times, especially where we're talking about cracked cusps, fractured teeth. And I think also people, because they're working from home much more than they perhaps used to, the issues about being with their partner more often and commentary about snoring, tiring, being tired, sleep apnea, in other words, are certainly becoming very popular questions that patients often ask about help in these fields. Derry, I know in your busy practice too, what are you seeing more commonly, particularly of recent times?
I guess a bit like you, Mike, it's the fractured tooth situation, especially virgin sevens or even moderate to heavily filled sevens. And if we think of the nutcracker model, where in order to crack a walnut, the closer we take it to the hinge joint, the greater force that we can actually generate. So if we've got patients who are clenching and grinding, and the closer they are to their TMJ hinge joint, the greatest load there is there. So we're seeing a lot of patients coming in with distal fracture lines running down the back of their sevens. Heavily filled sixes are also a culprit as well. And throughout the mouth, any heavily filled teeth, we're starting to see more and more internal cracks, endodontic issues as a result. And then tied into your world, Mike, headaches, neck aches from both daytime and nighttime grinding. It's obviously a challenging time for all of us, but it's very important that we, as we return to our practices, anticipate that these situations are going to be coming through our front doors on a more regular basis. And I guess the one of the key things is how can we help those patients in the immediate short term to be comfortable and able to move on with their lives, especially given restricted financial ability to afford ideal treatment. And time issues as well as they return back to their business lives. So, Mike, what's your first line of care that you would suggest for our listeners that in the areas that you're seeing you would recommend assistance with?
Yeah, well, I think one of the things, as you rightly said, is about dealing with the problem as it presents as an acute management issue. So considering things like even just a temporary occlusal splint device like the Aqualyzer is actually quite effective. Some people actually purchase those ones also, or you can tell your patient to purchase one from chemists that are prefabricated, boil and bite technology, very simple, very low cost. But you also got to deal with the pain. And one of the things I think is fair to say is you'd look at some anti-inflammatories, provided, of course, they're not an asthmatic or they're not on any blood thinning medication. And consider even Flexeril. Flexeril is a muscle relaxant, actually, and 5 to 10 milligrams at night before bed would be quite helpful. I actually often will say to patients, certainly in Australia, using Restivit, which is a brand name, doxylamine succinate. Now, you can buy that over the counter. It's prescribable, comes in 25 milligram dose. Often I'd suggest the patient breaks the tablet in half and at least start with half the dose at night. It will make them very tired and drowsy. But one of the problems with acute pain, as we know from even in dentistry and treating patients who have the hot pulp or an abscess, is being awake and unable to sleep. So assisting that sleeping is actually really important as well. And so these antihistamine type medications, I think, are preferable than using a Valium-based drug. And Derry, in that context, I mean, what are you seeing as first line of support that you're often offering your patients when they first attend, such as things like temporary fractures and other types of treatments?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I guess the problem is good diagnosis at the end of the day, because as we both know, patients can have strange pain patterns, sometimes emanating from teeth into joint areas or the areas around the joints. So it's paramount to be able to do a thorough diagnosis. So we will have our FRAC tests available, even a cotton wool roll, and asking the patient to direct us to the offending tooth and then gently lying a cotton roll occlusally along that area, ask them to slowly close if there's no pain, and then greater force of closure, and then flex at closure. And usually you can watch and see which way the patient feels the pain is emanating from. So if someone has an occlusal cotton roll placed, bites down and with no pain, but flexes to the left, then we're more than likely going to be seeing buccal cusps on lower left side or lingual cusps on lower right side. So we can start to see where the problems emanate from. Initially, depending upon time availability, the easiest treatment may well be just an occlusal adjustment to remove the offending cusp out of occlusion. If you have the time, it gives you the opportunity to do local anesthesia after correct and thorough diagnosis has been completed to open up the tooth and then start to look for cracks that exist within the areas underneath old fillings and sometimes even virgin teeth. We've been seeing a lot of distal cracks on sevens, again, for that reason of the nutcracker issue that we spoke about. Now, some of those are ending up in endodontic care needs. Some of them are having foundations prior to crown therapy being carried out later on, but we've then got the issues of both time and cost for the patient to be able to address that. But we'll come back to that a little bit later. Mike, you mentioned a little bit about sleep apnea. Obviously, as patients are spending a lot more time at home, what's your first line of treatment for a sleep apnea patient that you can do relatively quickly?
Well, look, one of the things I do is what I like to call a trial device, which Because, you know, when you're dealing with patients that particularly are tired, and may I say, even those listening to this program might actually find, because they've been spending a lot more time at home, the stresses of particularly disturbing one's partner's sleep. Using a simple thermoplastic ball and bite concept, which are often available in pharmacies, is a very quick interim management plan to help with the apnea, and then referring the patient to their general practitioner, medical practitioner, to get a sleep study organised. The reality is you will have patients that will come and in the first instance are quite happy to have something temporary done, but in order to treat them properly, they actually do need a sleep study, and that's really important from the perspective of not under-treating the patient. So what I mean by that is you can create even a simple trial boil and bite device to help them with their snoring issues, which may be a primary complaint from the patient. But the important thing is to make sure you're not necessarily just focusing on the snoring, because often a patient can have sleep apnea even though they don't snore. So I would advocate the discussion with the patient about trialing a simple boil and bite concept. Now, many colleagues may actually have them in their own practices. They might buy them and then make them up for the patient. Or the patient may actually already have purchased some online, perhaps. Bottom line is, these are simplistic things that you could recommend even in the first short instance, with the view that you'd like them to be more properly or formally assessed with a sleep study.
Do you think there's an issue, though, Mike, as we're returning and the financial consideration becomes an issue? Is there a lot to gain from sending them off for a sleep study versus just a temporary trial device?
Oh, yes. I mean, look, it's a fair comment. I think trial devices are literally that, aren't they? They're trial devices. So I think one of the things you need to make sure is obviously the patient doesn't have a temporomandibular disorder, because the first thing you do when you advance the mandible is you'll aggravate those symptoms. And second, as a short-term interim measure, a simple boil and bite's easy. And I realise, like a lot of people, they can buy them online without any intervention whatsoever from any formal study. But professionally, I think, and ethically, we have a responsibility to make sure whatever treatment we recommend for our patients, that it is actually in keeping with the current international standards. So I think short-term, I'd definitely be happy with a trial device. I often make them for my own patients to trial concepts of seeing what happens if they have a mandibular advancement splint in the mouth, and see if they can resolve the snoring, improve fatigue. But longer-term, definitely discussion is always appropriate about having a formal sleep study. That can be done at a later stage.
Okay, so on the basis of that, you've brought up the issue, Mike, that if they're going to be having a trial device, are there, say, 2 to 3 simple steps that you could recommend for TMJ analysis to make sure that they're not about to get into problems with TMJ prior to wearing a device?
Yes. Look, again, from my experience, I often ask 3 very standard questions. The first question I always ask, do they awaken in the morning with a stiff or painful jaw? The second question is I always ask, does their jaw get painful or get tired when they're chewing? And the third question is, does their mandible, has it ever locked, or have they had trismus? And just those 3 simple questions, if they say no to all 3, they're pretty much saying to you, without even examining the patient, that functioning-wise, their TMJ and their metacarpian muscle complex is working well. Of course, what I'd also suggest is when you're considering a dental advancement device and holding the mandible forward, you want to get an idea of how much protrusive range they actually have. And so just getting them to pull their lower jaw forward, you can actually establish, looking at incisal edge-to-edge relationships, and then how far forward can the mandible be brought forward to actually determine if, in fact, they're likely to have success with one of these devices.
Now, I know that we're going to be talking about TMJ and screening for it in the next or in 2 or 3 podcast time, Mike, but I suppose in a nutshell, for those that need a trial appliance, check their TMJs first and make sure that there is no potential risk there in terms of exacerbating that when they start the trial device. And as we said earlier, a lot of the things that we're actually seeing with regards patients attending at during COVID emergency times and afterwards is related to cracked teeth. And one thing I want to be very, very careful of and advise our listeners to be mindful of is that whilst we could jump in to start rebuilding a damaged tooth, as we look around the mouth and find other issues that exist there, the question has to be asked, do we focus on the presenting tooth or do we advise the patient of the other issues of what's going on in their mouth, of which this is the presenting complaint? And given that patients have got a very specific amount of finances to be able to spend on their mouths at the moment, I think we're now starting to move into the world of how do we actually communicate with our patients, which is going to be the topic for our next podcast. And a couple of key issues I'd like to suggest. Obviously, we've got to assist patients to understand their problems as they relate to their presenting complaints. But one thing I'd encourage very strongly is to be able to take high-quality intraoral photographic records and engage the patient and show them what else that we see there. Now, we never diagnose at the presenting appointment, but we enable the patient to understand the issues and what may happen if no treatment is carried out. We obviously recommend that they return for a comprehensive examination when it's appropriate, and we get them out of pain at that first visit. So they're key issues that we need to be mindful of. So, Michael, in summary and the end of our first podcast, a couple of views from you as to what you're seeing and you'd recommend coming back from COVID lockdowns?
Yeah, I think the first one would definitely be most patients would be attending for two things, I would imagine. The first is pain and pain management. And second is many, many patients, I'm sure, would be telling their dentists that they're desperate to have their teeth cleaned. The first one, pain management, I agree, Derry, that less is more. So it's about dealing with the acute problem and brief discussion with the patient about what the problem is and, in fact, more importantly, longer term, what you can do to resolve it permanently. I think most patients in the short term would be quite satisfied, I think, to have a temporary solution, but as long as they're aware, obviously, that there are more permanent, more involved, perhaps, treatments necessary are explained briefly at the time.
Yeah, and I think it's important to provide patients with payment options as well with sequencing of the ideal treatment rather than allowing the patients to take on the mentality of, well, if I pull the tooth out, all my problems are going to be fixed. And as we know, that's not the case. So this all leads us to a discussion on personality styles that we're going to be overviewing in our next podcast to ensure the best way to communicate with the patients is carried out by us, ensuring that they're all clear on their options of treatment and they're more likely to want to progress forwards with recommended treatment. So with that, we look forward to you returning next week with our next instalment focusing on communication and how we can assist you to understand the best way or certainly improved ways to communicate with your patients.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and invite you to visit onlinedentalmentoring.com to subscribe to access more free podcasts in our video library and also be able to submit your questions for our panel discussion podcasts. And remember, tell your colleagues about us if you feel they benefit from the information that we've presented. Until next podcast, take care.